now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott, and thanks to Scott for getting the call screener up. Oh, he had to log in and all this other stuff, and Drew had to help, and I just stood there with a blank look on my face. But anyway, hello, how's your plant world doing? If you'd like to talk about it, simply give a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And as usual, Saturday mornings, we start off with a good gardening stroll. Then afterwards, we can discuss what's going on in your yard, what's impacting your trees, your plants, your perennials, your annuals, and everything else, including your plants indoors. And what kind of impact does your dog have on your plant materials? Or is there insects that you need to be suspicious of, or spots, or transplanting, or can you take cuttings, or what should you be doing now? Maybe just enjoying? Why not? I'll share my knowledge to help you make a good decision, but the action you're going to take is going to be up to you. So remember, this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you having me in your plant world. Another very important player is Drew. As I said, he's producing, so he'll answer the phone. He just needs your first name when you call, and then he'll put it up on the caller screen. Yes, caller screen. I'm Mike Miller, by the way. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. Besides our Saturday morning get-together, I can come and see your plant world face-to-face. On-site consultation is a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage will have my email address and phone number. Well, let's get strolling. This walk stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Massive calorie pear trees planted as street trees. And the trunk has all kinds of gnarly roots twisted around them at the base. There's a brick sidewalk there. There's an upright juniper that's very blue-berried. Lots of blueberries there. And there's a historic square across Mississippi. And this was at the corner of Mississippi and Park Avenue. Squirrels were bouncing around in a redbud tree, talking, and I don't know who he was talking to, but I don't think he was talking to me because I don't speak their language. Maybe he was. And there's a small oasis here that's actually across the street from Lafayette Square. Several benches offer a place to sit down and just relax in the shade. Plantings include iris and daylilies, which have already finished flowering, but the foliage on the iris still looks very good. The daylilies are kind of starting to head downhill a little bit. Variegated liriope. It was dancing with some sedum autumn joy. Sedum autumn joy was really starting to open up as far as flowers go, and this variegated liriope with that yellow stripe really looked nice, the combination of the two of them together. There's hosta and lily of the valley and smilacina, all embracing tree trunks, planting spaces at the base of the trees. There's some euonymus, the evergreen euonymus, and it's climbing up some locust tree trunks. There was a pair of loppers. I should have stolen them, maybe. Why would they leave them out like that? But anyway, there's a hose there. There's soaker hoses, and they're getting just ready to go to work whenever somebody comes out and starts using them. American holly, there's shrub junipers as well. And some other things that are going on, there's a really tall decorative urn, which has cascading vinca minor, variegated vinca minor, and begonias planted in it. Sunflowers, they were smiling along with some thyme and some creeping jenny. A trio of sparrows almost flew right into my head. I can't believe how close they got to me. You know, I guess they were just going crazy, but there was lots of birds, and the air was just full of morning music from the birds, and that was really nice. There was a lot of dog walkers and families out enjoying this very cool for this time of year, at least what we've experienced lately, morning. So anyway, it was just, it was nice. And a drive back to get here to the station, I went down Park, and I tell you, Park Avenue, even the newly developed areas, as well as, of course, the historic areas of Lafayette Square, are unbelievable as far as planting goes. So if you're really into plants and you'd like to just take a stroll for a couple blocks, that would be a place that you could go besides the Botanical Garden. Because, I mean, the variety of plants and in the settings of the homes and everything else and green spaces, it's really, really nice. So, again, if you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We do have a caller. Why don't we go to Phil's? Hi, Phil.
Hi, thanks, Mike. I'm doing something wrong with my tomatoes. They look real nice, but I'm getting yellow leaves now, and they're dying off a little bit.
Just at the bottom?
Well, they're working their way up.
Ooh. So just in your fertilizing and everything else?
Yes, I am.
So you're doing everything you possibly can. So the only thing I could think of, my guess would be, is goofy weather might be having an impact. But you're probably compensating with, those dry spells. But it may be just a little bit too much moisture, because we know tomatoes like a lot of, or they like moist, but it might just be too much. Some of these rains we've had have just been drowning. So,
I've been watering quite a bit, too, so that's probably what it is.
Yeah, so just cut back on the watering.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Bye. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks, Phil. And if you do have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We'll be back after these messages. Quite the rainstorm yesterday, wasn't it? It's kind of amazing. Look out the window. Wow, that's a lot of water coming down. Let's head over to Lori's. Hi, Lori.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have crepe myrtle that is almost reaching the gutters, and I just wanted to know how and when I can trim it.
Basically, the time to prune is right after it finishes flowering. So you're talking probably late summer, maybe into the fall, prune it at that time. Or if you don't feel like pruning it then, you can wait and prune it in the springtime, early spring, late winter, early spring. So sometime before Ides of March, around Valentine's Day.
Okay. And is it, do I just keep capping it off, or what? How do I trim it?
Well, I mean, you can just, I wouldn't take too much off, because if you get down there where the stems start getting bigger, they may not have any functional flower buds being formed there. You know, even though they form them in the springtime to bloom for in the summer, it still could be ugly. Let's put it that way.
Don't want that. All right. Well, hey, thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay,
and bye. Now let's head over to Mike Shard. Hi, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple problems. I've got a metal trellis that's rusted on the bottom rung. Now, I've tried growing things on that side, and I put this climbing rose because I've got a purple clematis, and this is a yellow-red climbing rose. But anyway, I've tried, all kinds of rose food and flower food, and the last thing I did was put some fertilizer that I use for my azaleas and rhododendrons. And now that thing is really growing. Could that be something that rusty trellis has given off that's causing things not to grow?
My guess is that's probably not the case.
Okay.
It's probably just this, the soil and that, individual, circumstance. But that's kind of surprising that, the roses don't necessarily need an acidic, fertilizer. But if you're having luck with that, and you said you used regular rose food and it wasn't working.
No, I used Miracle-Gro. Oh. I used the Bayer with the insecticide in it, or root feeding,
Right.
I've tried a couple different things, and then finally I said, out of frustration, it's been 2 years now, I went and put this azalea food, and it's going crazy.
So, well, just, you know, watch out, because, again, the roses don't necessarily like an acidic soil, so it could maybe work right now, but it may not lead to, let's say, a long-term aesthetic success.
Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye on it. But one other thing, on this purple clematis, there would happen to be a seedling on a mimosa tree growing, and before I knew it, it was like 2.5 feet. And anyway, when is the best time if I can try to dig that up and out of there and replant it in an open area? What would be the best time for that?
After the foliage falls off in the fall.
In the fall. Okay, yeah. Good. I've got a chocolate mimosa, but for some reason its leaves are turning yellow. I don't know if it's because the deer were raking their antlers on the bark and opened it up last fall. I finally put a plastic drain tile around it, but I don't know if that's what's causing it or if it's because of the hot, dry area.
Yeah, and that particular variety is not necessarily a good variety for here anyway. That's, you know, probably part of the problem.
Is that right? Well, I saw it and it had red flowers instead of the pink. I've had some really good, beautiful mimosas, but the freeze thaw in our winters has really took out some nice mimosas on me, you know.
Oh, that's too bad.
A lot of butterflies and hummingbirds.
Right.
Well, anyway, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Sure, my pleasure.
All righty.
And let's head over to Don's yard now. Hi, Don.
Hello, am I on?
Yes.
Hey, I just had a question about, I had a tree cut down 3 years ago in my front yard, a big gumball tree, and got the stump ground out and everything. Of course, there's still some wood and whatnot in the soil. I've got some fungus and mushrooms popping up in that area. Is there anything I can do aside from just kind of re-leveling it and putting fresh dirt down to get rid of that growth?
Well, you're not going to get rid of it because those mushrooms and fungus and things like that, it's growing off the roots because they're dying.
Right.
So there's nothing you can really do. I mean, putting other soil down or anything else is not going to really do anything, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. I'm like, I got to be able to do something. My neighbor's yards are pristine, and I've got this big bald spot with mushrooms growing out of it. And I go out there and dig it up with a little garden shovel every once in a while. But, you know, they keep coming back. I'm just like, I just let it run its course until it's done. Right?
Yeah, there's nothing you can really do. I mean, you can't inject anything. You can't put anything on the ground. And speaking of mushrooms, Tracy and I were, I forget exactly where we were driving in South City, but we saw this a circumstance like what you're talking about. I could tell as we drove by that that's where a tree had been taken out. But these mushrooms, the caps or the heads, they must have been 6 or 7 inches across. They were huge. I was just surprised at how big they were.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you guys ever come across anything, I'll be in touch.
Great. Well, good luck. Yeah, it's a matter of patience when it comes to something like that. And now let's go to Brandon's. Brandon, how are you?
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about what you said about roses in acidic soil.
Right.
Maybe I misunderstood. You said that they didn't need them, need acidic soil?
No, they don't.
Okay, because I grow lots of roses, and I've been growing roses for 30 years. And roses prefer 6.5 pH, which is slightly acidic.
Right.
So I guess if you're defining acidic as like blueberry, then no. But they don't want basic either, though.
No, they don't, because that's too alkaline. But most plant material do like, you know, whether it's a lawn or whether it's roses or the majority of the plants want a slightly acidic soil or more acidic. The only things that don't are like lilacs and clematis and things like that. They like more alkalinity.
Okay.
So, but anyway, thanks for your insight.
Yep.
314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Again, a product that we get a lot of calls related to mole situations and mole problems, and people don't necessarily want to have traps. But here's a product that I have not used personally because I don't have mole problems, but I have talked to people when I've gone to their homes for walk and talks and things like that, and they have used this product called Kaput, K-A-P-U-T. And what that is a kind of a gel that you inject into surface tunnels, which that's the feeder tunnels of a mole. And as a mole comes tracking back along that tunnel, then he can run across this kaput, this gel stuff that you've injected there, and then they'll eat it, and then that kills them. So that's kind of a good way to go about doing it without having the choker loop or Victor Spear traps or kind of going out there and trying to shovel and digging them up and everything else. So that's one option for getting rid of the mole circumstances. And with this rain and everything, a lot of the insect problems that I was noticing just as I was walking around and everything else seems to subside a little bit. Because, I mean, some of these rains have been so strong that even a lot of the insects will, more or less hide on the underside of the foliage and things like that. But they're getting knocked off onto the ground, and that's kind of making it so the damage is minimal, at least for the last couple of weeks. So, which I'm, certainly glad and grateful for that. And again, I'm going to push the fact that, we've been talking about soil pH. Get your soil tested. Find out what's going on. That way you know what you can grow, what you need to add, what you don't need to add, and it's going to be to your advantage. In the University of Missouri Extension Service, they do soil testing. Cost is not great, but you can drop soil samples off in Kirkwood. You can actually send them down to Columbia and everything else. So just go online, check out the University of Missouri Extension Service, and find out exactly which way you want to do it and how to take the sample and everything else. Let's head over to Jack's yard. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Hi.
See, I've got cucumbers coming, and their vines are nice and everything, but I got no flowers on them, and they're about 2 feet tall now. And I also got zucchini plants, and they look like a bush, and they got a lot of flowers on them, and they keep falling off with no zucchini. And I don't know what's the problem.
I can say nothing else, but it's the weather, weather related.
It's too cool at night, maybe, and now all of a sudden you get...
Yeah, the combination of just everything, extremely hot, this, that, and everything else, just the wild combinations of things we're having. We're having, 6 or 7 or 10 days or 12 days with no rainfall, and then we're getting just drowned. And so all those different factors are playing a big role in production.
Okay. So I've got plenty of honeybees flying around. I always make sure I got a little clover so I don't cut it all off. But
right.
I thought maybe there wasn't enough of them or they weren't cross-pollinating or something,
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the bees or anything else. It's just the screwy weather. It's just,
okay.
Had it.
I was wondering, but ain't much we can do about that.
No, there isn't.
Well, I thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Tracy and I were in a grocery store speaking of crops and things like that, and there was actually some locally grown corn from Granite City, and there was the grocery store had really quite a few ears of corn, and it didn't look like necessarily the size of the classic corn that you get that's professionally grown some other place, but I didn't think this would, corn would be, productive up this early. It shows you that kind of caught me by surprise to see that much from a place up in Granite City. So if you do have any questions or concerns, we have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages. Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We do have phone lines open. Let's head over to Vince's yard. Hi, Vince.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was listening to you talking to that man who I believe had his tree taken out and was having mushrooms in his that he couldn't get rid of?
Right.
Right. You told him that nothing could be done, but there is something that could be done, which is what I did, and that is in the spring after I had a red maple tree. It was about 25 years old, pretty big. It was taken down. In the spring, I got out, and I got all the shavings out. I got a pick and shovel, and I dug up as many of the roots as I could find.
Whoa.
And not an easy job when you're in your mid-60s. So it took me a while, but then I filled it in with that black gold compost,
mm-hmm.
put down some sod, and by late spring, I had a pretty nice lawn where a tree was.
Well, great. I mean, that's a good... if you do eliminate the root system, that would work, but he had a sweet gum tree that was, and that's a lot of work, so I admire you for being able to dig up as many roots as you were able to.
Well, it was a red maple tree, so it had kind of surface roots.
Right.
And so a lot of horizontal roots. So I was able to get them pretty close to the surface. But then, once I filled it all in with that compost, I was able to lay down sod really nice, and it came out really nice.
Well, I'm sure, and from digging up all those roots, I'm sure your biceps are just massive.
No, it was a lot of work. Early spring, I would not try to do it this time of year.
It's a little hot this time of year. But well, great. Well, thanks for that insight.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And now let's head over to Sue's yard. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I'm having trouble with my tomato plants. Normally, I don't have this problem, but something is chewing off the leaves on the very tip top of the plant. And I'm looking for a tomato worm, but I see nothing.
Are you checking the underside of the leaves?
Oh, the underside of the leaves.
Yes.
Well, there's no leaves left on the very top where they're chewing, but I haven't looked under the leaves, no.
Right.
And I guess it wouldn't have to be a great big fat worm. It could be a small insect.
Right, exactly. And also, the best time to check is earlier in the morning and check the underside of the leaf and then along the stems, too.
Okay. And is there a spray or something? Certainly, if I see a worm, I'll pull them off.
Right.
But
that's probably the best thing to do is just do that. I mean, there are organic insecticides that you can use. There's several different types. So you can just head to your favorite garden center and tell them that you want to have something organic to be able to spray to kill some insects that are on your tomatoes. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I say just pick them off if you see them.
Right. Okay. I know it's not the deer, because the deer wouldn't leave a little stem. They just mow it right on down.
Right, and they generally don't like tomatoes all that much. That's not to say they won't eat them, but that's not one of their favorites.
Good, okay. I'm glad to hear that.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Sure,
my pleasure. I appreciate your show.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. And we do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I was surprised, not surprised, but I mean, the amount of lightning that we're having lately is just unbelievable. And the other night we had a lightning strike. It must have been right above our house because I could kind of hear the static as a result of the lightning strike. And I talked about this last week, but there's more than 1,000 people get struck by lightning every year. And that's just in the United States. And then up to 100 of those people that get struck actually die from that. So, and lightning, lightning is really kind of interesting in the fact that it causes some nutrients to come out of the sky and land on your plant material. So it does actually make your plant material better. So what is atmospheric nitrogen fixing? Lightning breaks apart nitrogen molecules, enabling the atoms to combine with oxygen to form nitrogen oxides. And that dissolves in rain and then will fall to the earth. And then that actually, fertilizes your foliage on your plant and your plant materials and everything else too. So just keep that in mind. Lightning is dangerous, but also it's beneficial to your plants. So let's head now over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions about a potted plant. We've had trouble with our boxwoods in the front yard, so we thought we'd put them in a pot where the soil is better. So my question is, what type of soil should I put in the pot, and what type of boxwood would do well in a big pot?
Probably I would get the boxwood with a smaller leaf, so microphylla, so
Okay.
As opposed to just a standard. And then also, I would make sure that you get whatever pot you get, it has drainage holes in the bottom. And then I'd use potting mix and not potting soil.
Potting mix. Okay. Is that the one that already like has fertilizer in it and stuff?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have fertilizer because you're going to have to be fertilizing it anyway. But it has, it's well drained. Because some of the potting soils are not as well drained. And then sometimes in a pot, especially for like broadleaf evergreens like a boxwood is, they don't really want a real wet circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about putting a few little rocks down in the bottom of the pot to promote drainage. I guess that is reasonable. What time of year should we try to plant this boxwood?
It depends upon how daring you want to be. You can plant. You can go ahead if you can get them in. I would not necessarily, because we don't know what the weather's going to be like and how much care it's going to take and everything else. But my tendency would be to wait into, for about another month or so into mid to late August, and then probably plant them in the pot at that time. That'll give them a couple months to get acclimated to growing in the pot, get the root systems established in the potting mix, and then they can go to sleep for winter time.
Pot's about 20 inches deep. Is that deep enough for a potted plant?
Oh, yeah, that's plenty deep. How about diameter-wise?
I think it's 15 or 18 feet across the top. Feet?
Feet? Whoa, inches. That is a big pot.
15 inches, I think.
Okay. So, yeah, just get the microphylla of the small leaf boxwood.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Well, thanks for the advice.
Sure. And I probably wouldn't get one that's any bigger than maybe a 3 or 5 gallon pot, because I mean some of the places will have them in bald and burlap.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get that. I'd get one that's already sort of has its personal history has already been in a pot. So, and when you pull it out of the pot that you're going to plant it, kind of shake some of the existing potting mix that it's growing in off of it as you put it down into the new pot. And then just make sure that the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground.
Excellent. Okie doke. Will do. All right.
That way, if there's any kind of settling or anything else, so just be cautious of that. And then watch out. I don't know what kind of exposure that you have or anything else, or why you weren't having good luck with the boxwood in the ground. But this past winter / late fall was detrimental to a lot of the boxwood, and just keep that in mind. So let's go over to Virginia's yard. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have two questions on vegetables. My pepper plants, they have peppers on them already, but there's no new peppers coming on it. There's no new flowers coming on it. And I was wondering, what's the problem there? And then I have on my tomato plants, they're producing tomatoes. I have a lot of tomatoes, but the tomatoes toward the top of the plant are starting to curl up. And I was wondering, what is that lacking?
The tomatoes are curling, or the tomato?
The leaves are okay. Curling up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably my guess is it's weather related as far as that goes. And some of the varieties of peppers, they only produce one, let's say, flush of peppers. They don't do continuous refruiting. So it might be variety wise as far as what why you're having that experience with the peppers, that you have peppers set, but there's no new flowering.
No new flowering. So that could be
variety-wise.
Just the way it is, variety.
Right. So, in other words, in the futures, you know, check with your favorite garden center, wherever you buy these, and find out which variety that they have that's going to be, that's going to continuously produce, you know, peppers for you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline, back after these messages. But if you have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We still got a couple minutes in this hour, and let's head over to Brian's yard. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Hey, Mike. Morning. Love your show. Hey, got a question. I had a catastrophic pool failure, so I decided to plant two watermelon plants and an eggplant. And what are the odds of survival if I transplant those? I understand I could probably get a decent enough root ball, but dragging those vines about 20 feet, ooh, you had any luck with that, or do you know anything or anybody that might have done that?
Boy, I don't have any experience with that. And to be honest with you, I don't know if, you know, I have not heard of anybody doing that. So, I mean, you could give it a try and see what happens.
Yeah.
But you said you have two?
I have two black diamond watermelon plants, and they're doing great. And the watermelons are about as big as cantaloupes right now. But I'm getting another pool put in, a bigger one. So I was going to try to swing them over about 15 foot,
ooh,
transplant them. And I just don't know. I know they can transplant a heart and a liver, but I wasn't for sure if I could move a watermelon plant that far. But I was going to give her a shot, but didn't know if you had any tips or
yeah, you can give it a try, but I don't think you're going to have success with it.
I don't either. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Love your show.
Sure. Thank you. And let's head over to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Very good.
Hey, I appreciate all you do here. A question about nuts edge, which I'm sure is one of your favorite topics, but I've got pretty widespread area-wise concentrations, and I'm sure is either leaking irrigation or just wet spots in general. I think it's probably too big area-wise for sprays. Is there something I should be doing for control for next year?
There's not really too much you can do. I mean, an herbicide spray directly onto it, so the plants won't produce any seed and drop seed. That's, you know, I mean, it is a perennial, and it will come back from the root system. But, I mean, going after it with a, you know, nuts edge killer is about the only thing you're going to be able to do. And then ultimately, once you get it, let's say, somewhat under control, then work the soil to, you know, elevate it so it's not a low wet spot.
Sure. Gotcha. Okay. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Sure. My pleasure. And the gentleman talking about the tomato, his watermelon, and trying to move him, and I said, it probably really won't work. But here's some things about the, you know, watermelons in general. They're members of the cucumber family, and they include, in that same family, includes cucumbers, squash, pumpkins, and muskmelons as well. Members of the family are monoecious, meaning they bear separate male and female flowers on the same plant. And the edible part of the watermelon is known as pepo, P-E-P-O. And that's when it's ripened, the ovary fruit, you know, will be watery flesh, and have a hard rind. And from a usage standpoint, watermelon is consumed as a fruit, but is still classified as a vegetable. Interesting. Here's some other watermelon trivia as well. First recorded watermelon was harvested over 5,000 years ago, and that was actually in Egypt. And because of the great water content, many explorers use watermelon as canteens, which, that seems a little bit strange to carry a watermelon around so you can get the moisture. But, you know, when things are dry, that's what you have to do. And there's over 1,200 varieties of watermelon grown across 96 countries worldwide. And China is the first in the worldwide, you know, watermelon production. I wouldn't think China would be number one, but when you go to Chinese restaurants or anything, they don't seem to have watermelon as part of the menu. But United States only ranks seventh out of all that. And in the United States, more than $5 million worth of watermelon are grown commercially every year, with Georgia being the most, let's say, growing the most watermelons, and Missouri ranks in the seventh place. I don't know exactly where Illinois is in that. And just the record of watermelon seed spitting, which, you know, as kids we used to love to do that, the spitting, was 75 feet, which I kind of find that hard to believe, but it was at a festival in Georgetown, Texas. But who could spit something 75 feet? You know, that's just kind of incredible. So I don't know what, you know, what the weather's going to be like today, but this is a good time if you like to do some hand weeding. The ground is soft, and it's easy to get the weeds up out of the ground, because if you've gone out into your yard and tried to do some hand weeding when the soil is dry, it is very, very difficult. When it's like this, probably even after the show today, once I get home, I'm going to do some weeding, because a couple of the beds that are in between the sidewalk and street, I don't know exactly how, well, you know, how many, you know, how many different types of varieties of grasses and broadleaf weeds there are, but I'm slowly but surely got them almost under control. So I'm going to do a little bit of hand weeding if it's not raining later on today, because it makes it so much easier when the ground is damp. And another thing, too, when they're predicting rain, I always like to water before the predicted rain shows up, because it softens the ground, and that means the rainwater can penetrate deeper into the ground. So it really is to the advantage of the plant material. If you let your, if you let the ground just be dry and it rains, a lot of times it doesn't soften up enough of the soil at the surface, so a lot of it will just run off and doesn't soak down into the ground very deep. And then so consequently, the root systems of whether it's lawn, perennials, annuals, trees, shrubs, or anything else, it's really not going to get to the, not get the advantage of all the water that is coming down. And as you know, we've had plenty of calls through the years, and what the plant material really needs is about an inch of water every 7 days. And when we get some of these, you know, some of these rainfalls, I mean, I don't know how much actually there is coming down. I don't actually measure it, but I know it's way more than an inch. So then you got to back off on doing the watering, because a lot of times people will have some kind of routine where, well, we water a half hour every day. And so if it's not raining, yes, they're going to be watering. But if it's just rained recently, you may be causing more problem than you're doing good. So just kind of keep that in mind before you start just getting into a habit of just doing watering routinely, just because it's, well, it's just been 2 days. Other things that you need to be watching for is this is a good time of year to, if you're going to do some pruning on your azaleas or rhododendrons, get it done ASAP, because you want to do the pruning right after, you know, finished flowering. And they finished flowering like almost 3 months ago now. So you want to do the pruning, or if you're going to do pruning, to me, it's to my, or my recommendation is don't do any pruning on your azaleas or rhododendrons, because it's just not, if they're too big, then congratulations on your ability to be able to grow them. Other things that you need to be thinking about is with your mower, just make sure that you sharpen your mower blade occasionally, because if you don't, what it does is it kind of shreds the top of the blade as you cut it off with the mower, and that shredding can lead to a, you know, potential fungus problems. So just keep that in mind. And understand that the spring, the summer bulbs should be exact, you know, really spectacular right now. So whether they're elephant ears or cannas or anything else, they should be real striking. And if they're not, that's too bad. So anyway, Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline. We will have phone lines open. when we come out of the news, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. And yes, this is the KMOX Garden Hotline second hour, which is a tip of the trowel. Special on-air recognition, individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me during this past week. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. But right now, if you have any questions or ideas or concerns or comments, just give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Then we can talk about it. And thanks for inviting me onto your show, where discussions can range from making a plant selection and should you be buying plant material this time of year and installing it with the way our weather is. If you're very careful and very cautious, there shouldn't be a problem with it. But if you're kind of like hit and miss and stuff, I would say wait until the weather starts cooling down a little bit before you start buying any kind of plant material. But it's really strictly up to you, because you can have success with planting in the heat of the summertime. Just going to take more care in relationship to the weather that we have. So when I share my thoughts, please remember my comments and opinions is not the only garden path to take towards success, but strictly offered for you to consider. And by the way, another very important player is Drew. He will answer the phone. He just needs your first name when you call. And then I'll put it up on the caller screen. And then I can talk to you about what's going on in your landscape world or your plant world. And I'm Mike Miller, by the way. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides our Saturday morning get-together, I can come out to your plant world and for an on-site consultation, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. And as I said before, today's tip of the trowel is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out to all the dog walkers. The majority of, and definitely I would have to say, 90% or whatever of the dog walkers in my neighborhood that I see routinely, they do carry plastic bags with them. And when their dog does go to the bathroom, takes a poop, then they stop and pick it up, and then they drop it off into a dumpster. So I thank all the dog walkers. I love to see the dogs out walking and the dog walkers. I mean, there's so many different varieties of dogs. I always kind of look at the people and see, let's see, does that dog look like they go with the people? And the majority of them do. There are a few that are kind of mismatched as far as some of the dogs are so strong. You see them, the dog will try to go, well, I want to go this way, and the person wants to go this way, and the dog will jerk. And so it's great entertainment and fun. We're not able to have dogs right now ourselves. I've had dogs in the past. I've had Irish setters, which I don't see any Irish setters anymore. So I don't know. I guess they're just not a popular dog. But I like the long hair that the Irish setters had. And then I had Irish setter lab mix. So that was kind of the combination of dogs that we had. And growing up, we had beagles. So that was when growing up in Ellisville, had quite a fun time with the beagles in our yard. So let's go ahead and get a couple calls in before we go to break. Let's go to Norm's. Hi, Norm. How are you?
Mike, thanks for taking our call.
Sure.
Is there such a thing as too much overseeding of your yard?
Too much. There can be too much, but also it's the timing is going to be very important. So any kind of seeding that you're going to do, don't do it in the heat of the summertime, because it's very stressful for the plant's seeds, the grass seed, as it germinates and then it's facing, even if you're doing adequate watering and everything else, the heat can really do some damage and you could really, let's say, lose the aesthetic value and lose the financial circumstance by putting seed down in the summertime. But best time to put seed down is going to be in the fall, sometime between mid to late August, all the way up through, I probably wouldn't do too much past mid to late October. But overseeding, if you do doing too much, I don't think so. But if you just be logical about it.
Our lawn was not doing well the past several years, so we started aerating and overseeding.
Okay.
And there's been a big improvement. So now here we are at year number three. The yard, the grass is looking pretty good. So that was really the question. Should we go ahead, aerate, and overseed again?
Yes, I wouldn't have any problem doing that at all. So I think that's smart to do. And with our goofy weather, I don't know, what type of seed you're putting down. If it's a bluegrass or a fescue, it doesn't really matter. But I always recommend doing blends as opposed to just one particular variety of one particular thing. And so overseeding routinely, there's nothing wrong with doing that whatsoever.
What's the latest point in the season? I know it's usually September. What's the latest that you can do that?
Probably, putting seed down. If you get to, past Halloween, mid to late October, again, it's going to be weather dependent. For the seed to actually germinate, get well established before, we have some, cold weather that could do some damage. So I would say around Halloween would be the last time I'd be putting seed down.
Okay. Appreciate your help. Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. Now, there are probably landscape contractors and lawn services and things like that. They may put seed down later, but for us, individual homeowners, I think there's nothing wrong with doing it, but having great success is something you got to just think about our, let's say, goofy weather. Let's see, where should we go? Let's go to Vern's yard. Hi, Vern.
Hello. Hi. Mike. I'm calling in regards to just recently had a, you might say, attack of goats. They got into the my fruit trees, which I have pear, apple, cherry, peach, and all them. It crawled up the fences and actually got higher up into the tree and broke a lot of limbs off and all this stuff and almost defoliated most of them.
Whoa.
Except for the top part. And the fences are all just down. I had big fences around it, 5-6 foot high. But my neighbor's goats got in there and kind of destroyed them almost. But I was wondering about trim them. Should I wait till the fall or wintertime and trim them, or should I go ahead and just trim them up now?
Anything, any branch that's, has a crack or a wound or that's, snapped or anything, go ahead and get that cut off now. I wouldn't do any just routine pruning, but because what can happen is how they set their flower, flowering / fruiting after the flowering is going to be, in the fall. So just watch out about doing any kind of pruning. But any damage, I would get rid of that ASAP.
Even like the ends of the, some of the limbs are, good, but the ends are like frayed.
Yeah.
Not them, just cut them ends off.
Yeah, exactly. And make your cuts at a 45-degree angle.
Okay, do that. All righty. Now, hopefully they come back with some leaves.
Really, I've never heard of goats climbing up into fruit trees and doing damage that way.
Oh, this fence goes around them about, I guess it's about 3 to 4 feet out, and it's them 2-inch by 4, and it's about six foot high is the way we had it.
Gee whiz.
But they got in there, and they actually ripped the fences apart.
Man, man.
To get to it. So, all righty. And I thank you.
Yep.
So I'll get busy on that then.
Good luck with that. Yeah, any kind of, and this is for anybody, that has damage this time of year due to storms or goats. Anything that's broken, get it cut off. as soon as possible, because any kind of open wound, when it's raining, water can get down into even just cracks and things like that, and could cause some, you know, internal rotting, or be, you know, let's say trigger a possibility of having some kind of internal rotting. So just kind of good, make a good cut and a smart cut, and that's the best thing to do, any kind of damage. That's why you see when we have some of these storms, there's so many tree services out all over the place. It's unbelievable. We were, I forget where we were driving the other day, and I mean, on one street, we saw four different tree services because there was like that many different trees and that many different yards had some damage to them. So anyway, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's see, where should we go? Let's head over to Liz's yard. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with, I want to feed the birds, but the squirrels, I don't know, they just come by the hordes, and I don't know what to do because I can't feed the birds when the squirrels are eating all the food.
Well, there are, you know, there are some bird feeders that the squirrels can get into, or you can actually have a, you know, put your bird feeder up on a post and then put like a metal metal, I guess, dome halfway up the post that the squirrel can't get around. But yeah, there's really not too much you can do because, I mean, they don't have anything else to do except look for food, and once they find a source, which I've had that problem myself, I feed the birds with throwing the bird seed out onto the sidewalk, and sometimes it really aggravates me at how long the squirrels will sit there and just eat and eat and eat and eat, and there's not really too much you can do other than try to physically create a circumstance which will keep the squirrels away from the bird seed.
Okay, but the birds will get some seed. I have two, what do you call those, bird baths in the yard for the birds. But the birds will get some food even if the squirrels get some?
Yeah, I mean, the squirrels don't necessarily eat all the different kinds of seeds, so I always got a blend. Now, they will go after any kind of sunflower for sure. So the birds that like the sunflowers, they may, you know, but anyway.
Yes, they sold me a bag of blend.
Right.
To attract songbirds and all kinds of birds. So, okay, well, I'll try to put some in the trees, and I'll try to, I don't know, I guess that's the answer, putting them up high.
Yeah. And not necessarily in a tree, because the squirrels can climb a tree. Putting up on a post is going to be much more to the advantage.
Oh, okay, okay. And you can buy those that go in the ground.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do that. And I thank you very much.
Well, sure, my pleasure. Yeah, I mean, it's, you can buy, I don't want to say a whole kit, but a kit that's going to have the post with the bird seed holder on top of it, and then it'll have kind of a dome that's that's going to be two-thirds of the way up that a squirrel can't climb around. So, but you're going to have to install a post, and it's not going to be all that easy, but if you're really serious about it and you want to get those squirrels out of there, well, they're still going to come around. But anyway, let's head over to Jim's yard now. Hi, Jim.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I had heard that you can snip off a part of a weeping willow tree and grow it like that into a tree. You heard that? Do you know anything about that?
Well, you can do that, but you're going to have to get some rooting hormone. You're going to have to, you can't just cut it off and stick it into the ground and expect it to grow. Now, potentially that could happen, but the chances of it happening are pretty minimal.
Could you root it like in a flower vase first?
Well, you're still going to get, what you're going to do is you're going to cut it and probably maybe 18 inches, remove at the bottom about 6 inches of the leaves, and then dip the tip that you where you've cut it into a rooting hormone, and then plant that. You can put it into a pot or you can put it into the ground.
Okay. Is there a good time of the year to do that, or a better time of the year?
Yeah, probably my tendency would be when the weather is, you know, when the ground is warmest, and that's the transplanting time of year, and that's going to mean fall as opposed to spring. In the heat of the summertime, the disadvantage of doing it then is because of the weather getting so hot that before the root system gets established, the cutting could actually just be baked by the heat of the summertime. So fall is going to be by the best time of year.
Okay, I appreciate the information.
Sure, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Yep, and let's see what's going on in Tony's yard. Hi, Tony.
Mike, how you doing? It's I'm in University City, and I grow a mandevilla in pots that go up like a balcony I have. And I'm just trying to get a good idea of what is a good routine for watering them. How much water do they need? I grew some last year. They did great. This year I planted some a little bit late, but I'm just trying to get them to really grow well, and I don't want to overwater. Sometimes I think I'm overwatering.
Yeah, so as long as you have a well-drained pot circumstance, and if you do have a saucer because you have a balcony or whatever, just don't let the water sit there. So after you water and it runs down through, and if there's water in the saucer, just dump it. And probably it's just going to depend upon exposure and everything else, but I always just advise people to look on the interior side of the pot. And if you start to see that the potting mix that it's growing in is, whether it's mandevilla or anything else, has shrunk away from, you know, the inside of the pot, so there's a gap, you know, then go ahead and water it at that time.
So not when it looks dry, but in other words, it's receding away from the edge.
Right, exactly. That way you don't have to worry about overwatering, because that's a lot of times that's more problematic than underwatering.
Yeah, because sometimes it looks kind of listless, and I think it might be from the overwatering. Also, on abrevidae, I've got some that are about 4.5 feet high, and they're kind of bushy. I haven't grown on the side of my house. Is it okay time now just to shape them up a little bit?
I would say probably not. Okay. It may be okay. It's just, again, when you cut off anything in this, you know, this time of year, you're exposing the needles of the arborvitae that have been shaded by the part that you've cut off to full, you know, potentially full sun or to brighter sun, and you could get a little sunburn on it. So then what you've tried to achieve, the aesthetic value may be even less than what you had hoped for.
Okay. So wait until, like, August or September?
Yeah. Wait until, you know, until the sun's less, put it this way, less intense.
Gotcha. All right, listen, thank you very much for your show, and I really enjoyed it. Appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hello, how are you doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 35 to 40-foot pin oak tree in my front yard, and I just noticed a 15-foot crack that runs right up the street on the west side of it. I guess the crack is probably 3/16, but it's very consistent and goes straight up.
Well, I wouldn't be overly concerned with that, to be honest with you. So, I mean, as long as the tree looks healthy, I mean, sometimes that could, you know, for a crack to be like that is on the west side of an older tree that can't be sun scald or anything along that line. It doesn't sound like a lightning strike, because I don't think it would be, you know, the size and where you're talking about it. But there's really nothing you can do. If you start to see the bark get loose where the crack is, pull any kind of loose bark off. But other than that, just don't do anything.
Okay, so don't put any, like, pruning spray or anything on it? Just let nature take its course?
Yeah, those sprays and stuff are really not going to do all that much help.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again so much for taking my call. Appreciate your program.
Sure. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Yes, folks. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's go over to Marilyn's yard. Hi, Marilyn.
Yes. I had the same problem that the previous caller had about his pin oaks.
Ah.
With a crack on the south side of my... I've got three pin oaks, four pin oaks, and only one of them has a crack in the south side. I noticed that late last winter. Then I watched it, and then all of a sudden, another crack appeared on the northwest side, and it goes up maybe 40 feet, I mean, as far as I can see. And then a black ooze started occurring about 4 feet from the surface, and I've been watching that. It seems to be getting worse, so I'm kind of concerned as to what to do.
There's really not going to be too much that you can do, to be honest with you. So, I mean, obviously an environmentally related type thing, and you could get a tree service to come out, but I don't think they're going to be able to do anything that's going to, let's say, seal the crack.
Yeah. I'm concerned, is the tree diseased? You have to take it out, or maybe a storm might blow it over?
It's definitely a concern. But if the tree is overall healthy and everything else, then this is just one of those things that, kind of happens. I hate to put it that way, but that's kind of what I feel.
Okay. Well, that answers my question. I'll just keep an eye on it.
Right. And like I said, you can have a tree service come out and see, what they may recommend. But I don't know if what they can do is going to make that much difference.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thank you very much for the information. I really appreciate your service.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Jerry's yard. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I've got a few questions, if that's all right. But I've got a row of about 16 Korean boxwoods. And a month ago, I noticed that many of them had dead spots within them. And it wasn't the entire branch. It was just... little clusters of leaves, so I kind of pruned them all out, and everything looked great again. And just the other day, I'm noticing again, more of these dead spots, and I'm not sure what to do. I thought I'd call the doctor.
Well, how old are these boxwood?
Oh, over 10 years.
Yeah. So my guess is it's probably an age factor as much as anything else to them related. Even if you haven't had a history of these kind of problems, boxwood just in general, and if it's, the tips, then it's going to be a little bit more concerning than if the dead or the brownish leaves are on the interior. That's just something that's going to be natural.
Yeah, these are kind of noticeable towards the outer part of the plant and
right.
Reach in just a little bit, but yeah. And they've just gotten to hedge height, I've been waiting for them. It's, maybe 8 years old, I don't know, but it's a shame to, you don't think they're going on boxwood hospice, do you?
No, I don't.
Good, okay. So I'll just kind of keep pruning the dead parts away and kind of pray for them?
Yeah, and the Korean is not not the best boxwood for here, so... I mean, it's tough and durable, but what you could do is you can go online at the Missouri Botanical Garden website and, put your problem in there and see what they say about it.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Also, if I may ask a couple other quick questions, I've got a thunderhead pine. It's a conifer called a thunderhead, and it loves where it is. It's getting huge. I think it's gorgeous. It's been there... 15 years maybe, but the wife doesn't like it so big. Sounds like I might want to wait till September or October before I prune it down, is based on a previous call, since it's so hot these days.
Right, yeah. That's definitely probably, I would, if you can, I'd even wait till as we, not do it in the fall as we're coming out of wintertime, sometime after the first of the year, I'd probably do the pruning at that time.
Gotcha. All righty. I appreciate that. And my last question is, we love hostas, but where we really need them is kind of a sunny area. Are there any hostas that like sun that are don't end up huge?
No. They're going to sunburn if regardless. Now, the ones that are solid leaf color, the ones that have the bluish cast are going to be a little bit tougher in the sun. But any that are variegated or any of the ones that are kind of a more palish green, they're going to sunburn really bad.
Okay. All righty. I'll have to break that news to the wife, too. Well, I sure appreciate your help and your service to the community. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. And thanks for having me on your show. Let's head out over to Terry's now. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I think I may have a little bit of a solution for your squirrel problems.
Ah.
What you do is you get a 6 foot or 8 foot tall pole with the shepherd book on it, and then go to your local dollar store and buy the biggest can of Vaseline. And what you do is you put your finger in it, and you take and put globs of Vaseline on that pole. When the squirrels go start climbing up to get on the onto the feeder, they'll slide down immediately. It's the funniest thing to watch. And grab your favorite beverage and sit there at your window and get ready to watch them because it's hilarious. So then they'll keep trying. Like the newer squirrels will come in. In the beginning, you have to go out there and when the Vaseline starts coming off from them, put more Vaseline on there.
Right.
Eventually, they won't even try anymore.
Sure.
And it doesn't take that long.
Really?
They do not want Vaseline on their paws.
I don't blame them, but you'd think the young ones that hadn't had the experience would be, each year trying to get give it a shot or give it a try, but that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I have my I'm not feeding the birds right now, but I have my pole right out from my patio.
Right.
And it still has Vaseline on it from the wintertime.
Oh, you're kidding. And
No. So it's really an easy solution. I was working at a hardware store and a local hardware store, and more people would come in with this problem. And some people, they look at me like I'm crazy, but the fact is it works. It's not going to work if you have your feet around a tree.
Right.
But if you get just buy your, your typical 7-8 foot shepherd pole, pole with shepherd hook.
Right.
It'll work perfect.
And I was just curious now with the Vaseline, when it, runs down the pole,
mm-hmm.
What do you have at the base that, cause I'm sure it could do some damage to any kind of lawn or perennials or anything.
No, nothing. I just have it in the lawn and, no, it doesn't, for the most part, it stays on their paws.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I say, we've had really hot weather, and I'm looking at it right now, and there's still globs of Vaseline that I put on it this winter.
Wow.
So it's not melting off.
Wow, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah. So at first, I used the Vaseline from Walgreens or drugstore. And then I thought, heck, I'm just going to go to the dollar store and buy a big one,
Right.
And, all I can say is if you have a shepherd pole, and your feet, you got your bird feeder on there, give it a try.
Yeah. That sounds good.
I think you'll be happy with the results.
Well, thanks for the insight.
All right. Have a good day.
Yep. And now let's head over to Mix. Hi, Mick.
Couple questions for you as well. Girlfriend has a Mexican petunia plant that's in a pot.
Are you familiar with those at all?
Yeah.
Okay. It's outside. It grew great. It blooms like crazy. And she takes it out in the spring, brings it in the fall, you know, year after year.
Uh-huh.
We had friends down from Lincoln, Illinois, a couple weeks ago, and that girl told us that she has, well at least one of them, but hers are planted in the yard. She leaves them out year-round. Is that, or I don't know if we're talking about the same plant here.
I would not think that it would be the same variety, but maybe it is. I mean, there's certain things that you don't, you know, consider it to be like a calla lily. I've been to people's homes that's had great success making the calla lily a perennial type, you know, circumstance or situation.
Uh-huh.
So that could certainly be the case.
Now, this thing blooms like crazy, and the flowers are there, and the next day they've all fallen off. By the end of the day, there's another batch of flowers on it.
Right. Yeah, they're prolific.
It's an interesting plant. Well, I got a harder one for you. I have a mimosa tree that you helped me with about 15 years ago when I planted it. It's done. It's huge. I mean, it's better than I could have ever wanted. And it usually has a full canopy of the pink flowers. This year, I have one branch with maybe five or six flowers clear out on the end and nothing else.
No blooms.
No blooms. There's mimosa trees within a couple blocks of me that are still in full bloom. I don't know what happened here.
Well, I would say just the exposure and everything else, the age and all those other factors played a role in your particular tree this particular year not blooming as opposed to what it normally should. But it's, you know, if you've had a history of good blooms and everything else, it's just got to be the individual circumstance of that setting with that particular tree.
Well, 15 years isn't old for those, is it?
No. I mean, they do get old and they can start becoming dysfunctional, but it's not going to just turn off that fast.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well, I'm...
Wait till next year,
yeah. Yeah, we'll just have to wait till next year.
Yeah, and see what happens.
Mark it on your calendar. I'll call you back.
Okay, great. Thanks. Let's go over to Greg's yard and see what's going on. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, my wife and I have a nice wooden deck out back, and we have some nice planted annuals and perennials. And yesterday, actually it's happened twice now, we found in one of our ceramic pots that had geraniums and petunias and some lobelia, I think. I'm not sure what else is in there. Anyway, a nice, fat, young, not a beaver, but a groundhog just laying on there, happily chewing away and eating all of our petunias. So, is there something besides putting a wire screen around it and a bunch of stuff we don't want to do, which we've done for other things, is there something we can do to sprinkle, any magic potions to sprinkle on the flowers that'll keep those guys out of there?
Well, it's surprising the groundhogs are, you know, coming into there. But anyway, I would just go to your favorite garden center. There are repellents that you could use. Some are granite, okay, or some are, you know, liquid. And just maybe a combination of the two, or just, you know, try one and see if it's going to work.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if it's a ground. It looks like a ground, but it's like a marmot. It's furry and kind of plump and looks like a groundhog, but I don't know what it is. But it was just sitting there. So, okay. Well, we'll give that a shot. By the way, the other, just comment on your previous caller's Vaseline greasing of his bird feeder pole. I use axle grease. I've been using axle grease on my shepherd's hook for years, and it works just as well too. I don't know which one's cheaper. and his comment that is have a drink and get ready for entertainment is very true.
So. Well, great. Well, thanks for the insight.
Okay.
And now let's head over to Chris's yard. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hey, Mike. I've got a 25-year-old Japanese red maple tree, and it's kind of thinned out all throughout. You know, dead branches. I'd say maybe a third of the tree has got dead branches on it.
Ooh.
Is it past its life expectancy, or did our summer just do all this?
Well, I think that's just an aging process. So I would, any of the branches that have lost their foliage, just go ahead and cut those out. It doesn't necessarily mean that aesthetically, you know, is this one that has a very ferny leaf, or is this one that's it grows like an umbrella, or is this an upright one?
What do you mean by upright?
Like a regular kind of small tree.
Yeah, I mean, the tree's probably 15 feet tall.
Okay, so it's not the dissectum variety, which is a little bit weaker. But this should be okay. I mean, just cutting out the, you know, let's say dysfunctional branches, there's nothing wrong with doing that.
And I can do that now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, just the maples in general like to be pruned in the summertime, and especially when you're just cutting out any kind of dead wood. And now let's head over to Carol's. Hi, Carol. Can you do it kind of quick?
Yes. My question is about zucchini plants. The vine looks healthy, no pest, no disease. When it sets on the zucchini, they get about 2 to 3 inches long, and then the end turns brown and they start to rot. What causes it, and can it be fixed?
It's probably related to the fertilizer you're using. What kind of fertilizer?
It's at my kid's garden, and I'm not sure they're fertilizing it at all.
That might be what the problem is then.
It needs fertilizer?
Yeah. They're going to do better with the fertilizer.
Okay. Okay,
and so
that's not the blossom rot like you find on tomatoes.
No. So it's okay. Not necessarily, you know, related to a calcium circumstance or anything specifically.
So what kind of fertilizer?
I would say just tell them to go to their favorite garden center and then, you know, see what that particular garden center has.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, because I mean it's got to be related
to do with watering.
To a nutrient type thing, but you know, it shouldn't be a water related circumstance if the fruits are getting that large and then starting to get some, let's say, rot at the end of it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Bye.
Pleasure. And everybody just keep in mind that within the month or so, this cool season annual weeds are going to start germinating. So get ready to get that pre-emergent and spread the pre-emergent into your lawn area or into your perennial area. Some of the cool season annual weeds that the pre-emergent will control by spreading the pre-emergent mid to late August are henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrasses, and several others. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline. I will see you next week. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find. As long as a tree looks healthy, I mean, sometimes that could, you know, for a crack to be like that is on the west side of an older tree, that can't be sun scald or anything along that line. It doesn't sound like a lightning strike because I don't think it would be, you know, the size and where you're talking about it. But there's really nothing you can do. If you start to see the bark get loose where the crack is, pull any kind of loose bark off, but other than that, just don't do anything.
Okay, so don't put any, like, pruning spray or anything on it? Just let nature take its course?
Yeah, those sprays and stuff are really not going to do all that much help.
Okay. All right, well, thank you again so much for taking my call. Appreciate your program.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's go over to Marilyn's yard. Hi, Marilyn.
Yes. I had the same problem that the previous caller had about his pin oaks.
With a crack on the south side of my, I've got three pin oaks, four pin oaks, and only one of them has a crack in the south side. I noticed that late last winter. Then I watched it, and then all of a sudden, another crack appeared on the northwest side, and it goes, well, it goes up maybe 40 feet, I mean, as far as I can see. And then a black ooze started occurring about 4 feet from the surface, and I've been watching that. It seems to be getting worse, so I'm kind of concerned as to what to do.
There's really not going to be too much that you can do, to be honest with you. So, I mean, obviously an environmentally related type thing, and you could get a tree service to come out, but I don't think they're going to be able to do anything that's going to, let's say, seal the crack.
Yeah. I'm concerned, is the tree diseased? You have to take it out, or maybe a storm might blow it over?
I think, you know, it's definitely a concern. But if the tree is overall healthy and everything else, then this is just one of those things that, kind of happens. I hate to put it that way, but that's kind of what I feel.
Okay. Well, that answers my question. I'll just keep an eye on it.
Right. And like I said, you can have a tree service come out and see, you know, what they may recommend, but I don't know if what they can do is going to make that much difference.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thank you very much for the information. I really appreciate your service.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Jerry's yard. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I've got a few questions, if that's all right. But I've got a row of about 16 Korean boxwoods. And a month ago, I noticed that many of them had dead spots within them. And it wasn't the entire branch. You know, it was just... little clusters of leaves, so I kind of pruned them all out, and everything looked great again. And just the other day, I'm noticing again, you know, more of these dead spots, and I'm not sure what to do. I thought I'd call the doctor.
Well, how old are these boxwood?
Oh, over 10 years.
Yeah. So my guess is it's probably an age factor as much as anything else to them related. You know, even if you haven't had a history of these kind of problems, boxwood just in general, and if it's, you know, the tips, then it's going to be a little bit more concerning than if the dead or the brownish leaves are on the interior. That's just something that's going to be natural.
Yeah, these are kind of noticeable towards the outer part of the plant. And
right.
Reach in just a little bit, but yeah. And they've just gotten to hedge height, you know. I've been waiting for them. It's, well, maybe 8 years old. I don't know, but it's a shame to. But you don't think they're going on boxwood hospice, do you?
No, I don't.
Good. Okay. So I'll just kind of keep pruning the dead parts away and
right.
kind of pray for them.
Yeah, and the Korean is not the best boxwood for here, so. I mean, it's tough and durable, but what you could do is you can go online at the Missouri Botanical Garden website and, you know, put your problem in there and see what they say about it.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Also, if I may ask a couple of quick questions, I've got a thunderhead pine. It's a conifer called a thunderhead, and it loves where it is. It's getting huge. I think it's gorgeous. It's been there 15 years maybe, but the wife doesn't like it so big. Sounds like I might want to wait till September or October before I prune it down, is based on a previous call, since it's so hot these days.
Right, yeah. Do the, you know, that's definitely probably I would, if you can, I'd even wait till as we, you know, not do it in the fall as we're coming out of wintertime sometime after the first of the year. I'd probably do the pruning at that time.
Gotcha. All righty. I appreciate that. And my last question is, we love hostas, but where we really need them is kind of a sunny area. Are there any hostas that like sun that don't end up huge?
No. They're going to sunburn regardless. Now, the ones that are solid leaf color, The ones that have the bluish cast are going to be a little bit tougher in the sun, but any that are variegated or any of the ones that are kind of a more palish green, they're going to sunburn really bad.
Okay. All righty. I'll have to break that news to the wife, too. Well, I sure appreciate your help and your service to the community. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. And thanks for having me on your show. Let's head out over to Terry's now. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I think I may have a little bit of a solution for your squirrel problems.
Ah.
What you do is you get a 6 foot or 8 foot tall pole with the shepherd hook on it, and then go to your local dollar store and buy the biggest can of Vaseline. And what you do is you take, put your finger in it, and you take and put globs of Vaseline on that pole. When the squirrels go start climbing up to get on the under the feeder, they'll slide down immediately. It's the funniest thing to watch. And grab your favorite beverage and sit there at your window and get ready to watch them because it's hilarious. So then they'll keep trying. Like the newer squirrels will come in. So you got to, in the beginning, you have to go out there. And when the Vaseline starts coming off from them, put more Vaseline on there.
Right.
Eventually, they won't even try anymore.
Sure.
And it doesn't take that long.
Really?
They do not want Vaseline on their paws.
I don't blame them, but you'd think the young ones that hadn't had the experience would be, each year trying to get give it a shot or give it a try. But that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I have my I'm not feeding the birds right now, but I have my pole right out from my patio.
Right.
And it still has Vaseline on it from the wintertime.
Oh, you're kidding. And
No. So it's really an easy solution. I was working at a hardware store and a local hardware store, and more people would come in with this problem. And some people, they look at me like I'm crazy, but the fact is it works. It's not going to work if you have your feeder on a tree.
Right.
But if you get just buy your typical 7-8 foot shepherd pole with shepherd hook.
Right.
It'll work perfect.
And I was just curious now with the Vaseline, when it runs down the pole,
mm-hmm.
what do you have at the base that, cause I'm sure it could do some damage to any kind of lawn or perennials or anything.
No, nothing. I just have it in the lawn and, it doesn't, for the most part, it stays on their paws.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I say, we've had really hot weather, and I'm looking at it right now, and there's still globs of Vaseline that I put on it this winter.
Wow.
So it's not melting off.
Wow, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah. So at first, I used the Vaseline from Walgreens or drugstore. And then I thought, heck, I'm just going to go to the dollar store and buy a big one,
Right.
And, all I can say is if you have a shepherd pole, in your feet, you got your bird feeder on there, give it a try.
Yeah.
I think you'll be happy with the results.
Well, thanks for the insight.
All right. Have a good day.
Yep. And now let's head over to Mix. Hi, Mick.
Couple questions for you as well. Girlfriend has a Mexican petunia plant that's in a pot. Are you familiar with those at all?
Yeah.
Okay. It's outside. It grew great. It blooms like crazy. And she takes it out in the spring, brings it in the fall, year after year.
Uh-huh.
We had friends down from Lincoln, Illinois, a couple weeks ago, and that girl told us that she has, well, at least one of them, but hers are planted in the yard. She leaves them out year-round. Is that I don't know if we're talking about the same plant here.
I would not think you that it would be the same variety, but maybe it is. I mean, there's certain things that you don't consider to be like a calla lily. I've been to people's homes that's had great success making the calla lily a perennial type, circumstance or situation.
Uh-huh.
So that could certainly be the case.
Now, this thing blooms like crazy, and the flowers are there, and the next day they've all fallen off. By the end of the day, there's another batch of flowers on it.
Right. Yeah, they're prolific.
It's an interesting plant. Well, I got a harder one for you. I have a mimosa tree that you helped me with about 15 years ago when I planted it. It's done. It's huge. I mean, it's better than I could have ever wanted. And it usually has a full canopy of the pink flowers. This year, I have one branch with maybe five or six flowers clear out on the end and nothing else.
No blooms.
No blooms. There's mimosa trees within a couple blocks of me that are still in full bloom. I don't know what happened here.
Well, I would say just the exposure and everything else, the age and all those other factors played a role in your particular tree this particular year not blooming as opposed to what it normally should. But if you've had a history of good blooms and everything else, it's just got to be the individual circumstance of that setting with that particular tree.
Well, 15 years isn't old for those, is it?
No. I mean, they do get old and they can start becoming dysfunctional, but it's not going to just turn off that fast.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well,
wait till next year.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait till next year.
Yeah, and see what happens.
Yeah, mark it on your calendar. I'll call you back.
Okay, great. Thanks. Let's go over to Greg's yard and see what's going on. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, my wife and I have a nice wooden deck out back, and we have some nice planted annuals and perennials, and yesterday, actually it's happened twice now, we found in one of our ceramic pots that had geraniums and petunias and some lobelia, I think. I'm not sure what else is in there. Anyway, a nice, fat, young, not a beaver, but a groundhog, just laying on there, happily chewing away and eating all of our petunias. So is there something besides putting a wire screen around it and a bunch of stuff we don't want to do, which we've done for other things, is there something we can do to sprinkle, any magic potions to sprinkle on the flowers that'll keep those guys out of there?
Well, it's surprising the groundhogs are coming into there, but anyway, I would just go to your favorite garden center. There are repellents that you could use. Some are granite, okay, or some are, liquid, and just maybe a combination of the two, or just, try one and see if it's going to work.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if it's a ground. It looks like a ground, but it's like a marmot. It's furry and kind of plump and looks like a groundhog, but I don't know what it is. But it was just sitting there. So, okay. Well, we'll give that a shot. By the way, the other... just comment on your previous caller's Vaseline greasing of his bird feeder pole. I use axle grease. I've been using axle grease on my shepherd's hook for years, and it works just as well, too. I don't know which one's cheaper. and his comment that is have a drink and get ready for entertainment is very true. So.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for the insight.
Okay.
And now let's head over to Chris's yard. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hey, Mike. I've got a 25-year-old Japanese red maple tree, and it's kind of thinned out all throughout. Dead branches. I'd say maybe a third of the tree has got dead branches on it.
Ooh.
Is it past its life expectancy, or
that our summer just do all this?
Well, I think that's just an aging process. So I would, any of the branches that have lost their foliage, just go ahead and cut those out. It doesn't necessarily mean that aesthetically, you know, is this one that has a very ferny leaf, or is this one that's it grows like an umbrella, or is this an upright one?
What do you mean by upright?
Like a regular kind of small tree.
Yeah, I mean, the tree is probably 15 feet tall.
Okay, so it's not the dissectum variety, which is a little bit weaker. But this should be okay. I mean, just cutting out the, you know, let's say dysfunctional branches, there's nothing wrong with doing that.
And I can do that now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, just the maples in general like to be pruned in the summertime, and especially when you're just cutting out any kind of dead wood. And now let's head over to Carol's. Hi, Carol. Can you do it kind of quick?
Yes. My question is about zucchini plants. The vine looks healthy, no pest, no disease. When it sets on the zucchini, they get about 2 to 3 inches long, and then the end turns brown and they start to rot. What causes it, and can it be fixed?
It's probably related to the fertilizer you're using. What kind of fertilizer?
It's at my kid's garden, and I'm not sure they're fertilizing it at all.
Oh, that might be what the problem is then.
It needs fertilizer?
Yeah. They're going to do better with the fertilizer.
Okay. Okay, and so that's not the blossom rot like you find on tomatoes?
No. So it's okay. Not necessarily, you know, related to a calcium circumstance or anything specifically.
So what kind of fertilizer?
I would say just tell them to go to their favorite garden center and then, you know, see what that particular garden center has.
Okay. 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 Thank you so much.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's got to be related
to do with watering.
To a nutrient type thing. But, you know, it shouldn't be a water-related circumstance if the fruits are getting that large and then starting to get some, let's say, rot at the end of it.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure. My
Bye.
Pleasure. And everybody just keep in mind that within the month or so, this cool season annual weeds are going to start germinating. So get ready to get that pre-emergent and spread the pre-emergent into your lawn area or into your perennial area. Some of the cool season annual weeds that the pre-emergent will control by spreading the pre-emergent mid to late August are henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrasses, and several others. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline. I will see you next week. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find.